Welcome back, everybody, to Rain on Your Parade with J.L. Covan. I am J.L. Covan here, as always, minus three episodes with producer Mike. Hello, producer Mike.
Hi, everybody. Hi, J.L. How's it going?
It's great. It's a late Tuesday, not our normal time.
It is.
And not even the time we agreed upon recording.
Very disorienting.
But you know me. I'm a roll with the punches kind of guy. Don't sweat the small stuff. That's what they call me. And of course, we're here also with associate producer, intern.
Yes.
Frankie.
Yeah.
Who is not relaxing right now.
No. You know, I said it to him the other day, though. I said, Frankie, relax. And I laughed out loud. I thought of you immediately.
Thank you. Oh, my God. A horrible pun. Who does that make me think of? JL. So big week for me this week. As you're listening or watching this already, it's out. Trump versus Canada. My unexpectedly amazing special from the show I did in Toronto in April. Basically, when Trump was going after Canada with his first round of tariffs, I said, let me go and let me see if I can finally get into some of these Canadian clubs, because I have an angle. It's not just like I'm a very funny guy. It was more of a I can sell a lot of tickets in your country with this. Who really cares if I'm funny at this point? See, I'm playing the game now.
Yeah.
Well, it took talent, 15, humor, material, who cares?
20 years?
Sell tickets. So I get in contact with the owner of the Yuck Yucks chain, Tyler Morrison, comedian in from Canada, hooked me up, gave me the intro, or let me use his name. And they said, come on up to Toronto. I go up to Toronto, pack the place, something you never hear me say at any time in America. And the I had asked Tyler, do you know anybody who can film it? And I'm thinking, as you can imagine, Mike, the sort of content, like, what if something cool happens? I want to be able to put up two or three Instagram clips, because that's the point of comedy now.
Right.
And he put me in contact with a guy named Jeremy, who was charging me like more than I expected, a lot more than I expected, but not as much as I then ended up overpaying him because I was paying him in American. but I was just expecting like some dude who's going to have one camera, maybe make a couple edits for me, make some clips. He shows up with two assistants, a three camera shoot, roving camera. What we got is a 4K, like Netflix level special of me giving like a 20 minute ad lib speech to the people of Canada on why they should become the 51st state. And then I took questions for almost an hour from the crowd. It's a top five show of my life. Trump, stand up, you know, donkey, all the shows I've ever done. It's a top five. And it's out now. As you're listening to this or watching this, it is out on my YouTube. And hopefully you're hearing me and seeing me within like 24 to 48 hours of the special being released, because I assume you want to watch it. It's free. And I need the numbers to be as good as possible. Algorithms are not my friend. We all know that. So whatever way, if it can go viral in Canada, so be it. I just want as many people watching it. It is A plus. And that's as much a testament. Like Jeremy and I, after the show, it was just this mutual, like, I'm looking at like his setup. And then when I saw his video work, I was like, incredible. And he watched the show and he had no idea what he was in for. He was like so fired up. That was probably the best feeling, other than the line of over 100 fans to meet me.
That's a good thing.
It was amazing. It was, and I know this sounds shitty maybe or arrogant, but it's like, that's what I believe I should have been getting for the last like 7 or 8 years.
Right.
I'm not talking about selling out arenas and shit, but just like packing clubs and crushing and then getting people like, love your stuff. So good. So good. And it was nice to have some of those people be like, I've been following you since 2016. And I'm like, what? Get them to the front of the line.
Right.
You Sebastian come lately.
So maybe the issue is just that you need to move to Canada.
Well, maybe. I keep thinking if I had it, the problem is with no agent, no manager, I see no reason why I shouldn't have a European tour of this show.
Yeah.
Like, but not going to fly to Europe and find out that I managed to book like six pubs and the trip is going to lose me 6,000 pounds or whatever you say in Europe. But this show, in the very least, is a beautiful like landmark of my work as Trump, because it showcases so much of what I do well on in the best possible version. So I hope you've watched it, or I hope you go watch it, but please, just like I ask you to share this podcast and you don't, share the special and do that. I'm so proud of it. And like, it's always nice to see somebody come at you with the level of care and work that you think your skills merit. Yeah. Like he did such a really beautiful job with it.
Kind of the way you feel about this relationship?
Most of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, you should have seen my face glowing when I first saw like the show and some of the clips and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then like, you know, then we went through a little desert of, you know, months without clips and whatnot.
I got very busy.
Yeah, no, sure. But yeah, it's awesome. And I'm really, really proud of it, really happy with it. So I hope you like it too. I had to cancel a show in Astoria last week, Mike.
Mm.
The venue seats 50. I thought that's light work for this guy.
Yeah.
And I was doing the show with three other comics based in New York. So certainly.
So someone's got to sell tickets.
Four comics with a combined following of like 500,000 on social media.
Yeah.
We're going to sell tickets.
But you didn't.
At 9 p.m. The show was 8 p.m. on the 9th. On the 7th at 9 p.m. on the 6th, we had sold 13 tickets.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were all from me. And then as soon as we canceled the show, the emails, the messages coming in like, coming to your show tomorrow. Can't wait. Can't find the ticket link, though. And I was like, it's a funny thing. We canceled the show. I actually, a special shout out to a fan who was in town from Atlanta for business. And So he wasn't in town just for the show, obviously, but he was like, oh, wow, this guy's really funny. I can go see the show. Struggled, but made his way to Astoria, because if you're not from New York City, you know, going from Manhattan to Astoria, like, where am I going? And it's like, I'm on 28th Road and 15th Street and 29th Avenue.
Yeah, the worst.
Am I in Inception? What the fuck is this? Is this a Christopher Nolan movie?
What's the address?
No. That we were at this address 3 weeks ago. Christopher Nolan has cut up the time in Queens, so it's very different. But he got a message from the club 15 minutes before showtime that the show was canceled.
Oh, man.
And I remember Jay was telling me on the phone that the person at the club was like, well, can you tell your people that it's canceled? We were like, we can put out an announcement. You're the ones who know who bought a ticket.
Right, right, right. Yeah,
you should do that.
Yeah.
And
yeah, why would that be on you guys?
No, I mean, it might have been like an intern or somebody young just being like, hey, can you let, but that's obviously quite ridiculous. So the lesson is for these upcoming shows I have: Jersey City, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. That's a big one because that club is big and I'd like to keep going back there. I used to draw in Philly. Don't know what happened, but please, the Philly show in October is, they're all big. The Philly in October, if you're anywhere near Philly, I need you at that show. I need you to get your friends to go to that show. And then Charlotte, North Carolina in December. And then I'm going the next night, taking the bus over to Raleigh to see the Rangers
That's
versus
right.
the Hurricanes.
Yes, you mentioned.
Very fun.
Yeah.
So get tickets to those shows. Give this podcast 5 stars on wherever you listen to it. Tell a friend, watch the special. If you do anything this week, watch, thumbs up, subscribe to the channel, and share it with anybody and everybody, because it's awesome. It's so awesome. I'm so proud of it. So this intro, I don't have a lot of banter. I have any number of things I could complain about, but that's what the main section's for. So we'll be right back to talk gig economy, AI, and other bullshit after this break. And we're back. Mike, how was that break?
Quite relaxing. Frankie's on my lap. He's not really doing his associate producer responsibilities, but he is being very, very cute and a very good boy.
Yeah, he's learning, you know, this sort of a shadowing process.
Yeah,
you know?
He's new.
You know, not just anybody can screw up the mic from a few episodes ago, and then I have to get a bunch of complaints and start basically like threatening and banning people from my channel. I'm like, well,
you weed out the bad ones.
Yeah. And some of the good ones, probably. Let's be honest. I have a Netanyahu-like philosophy when it comes to the comments section.
Yeah.
Your compliment was only half nice. You will be blocked forever from this channel. That is actually what I did to somebody yesterday on Instagram. And then their friend wrote to me, commented in the same video. It was like, my friend said that just because he said your voice isn't the best, but your material's good.
Mm.
And I said, tell your friend to keep his half compliments to himself, and you're blocked now too.
Yeah. And that's the bottom line.
And that's the bottom line. You're coming into my comments talking trash, telling me I don't have the best voice. I want to talk really kind of about at the risk of covering Nathan McIntosh material. Tech.
Yeah.
Specifically, I think I've probably harped on the gig economy for a while. But what I'm seeing in our economy, and it's like a lot of things in our country, AI, I'm not going to pretend to know like a ton about AI, but every like smart, the smart people who sound smart, but sound also like they're invested in it financially. Yeah. There's a tone.
The people with the dog in a fight.
But there's a tone you hear from people who will try to sound measured. But that's because they're trying to like maybe reassure markets or reassure people like me, like, don't worry, hand over everything, let it become a mega $1 trillion business and everything will be OK. But it's always this like we have to integrate it in a smart way. We have to do. And I know it seems inevitable. I'm not pretending, you know, it used to be you can't fight City Hall. Now you can't fight big tech.
Yeah.
Is kind of where we're at.
They're going to do what they want.
Yeah. And I sort of understand wanting or even hoping that you can deliver these things whether it's an ethical or smart or measured manner that we benefit, that it doesn't just rapidly change our economy and destroy industries and things. But it's going to do all those things. Like we kind of keep talking ourselves into these fantasies. Where if I talk in a measured enough tone and say, it's important that we do A to have B.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you said it in a sing-song manner. Uh-oh, you know what that means? Mrs. So-and-so's on crack.
Right.
School of Rock, sorry.
Right.
But no, we were singing. We were singing. We were doing math in a sing-song fashion. 54 is a 45 more than what is the answer, Marta? 9? No, it's 8. No, it's 9. You're right, it's 9. That's a magic number.
Yeah.
One of my favorite movies ever.
Yeah.
Such, and the, two of the kids are married. Marta.
Oh, they got married like to each other.
And like the chubby kid who was like the roadie.
Yeah.
He's like a lawyer, and they're married.
Oh, cool!
And I was like, I love that. Why couldn't I be invited to that wedding? I'm the biggest fan of that movie. I would pay like a lot if they were doing like a fundraiser. I'd be like, I'll pay $5,000 to be at the School of Rock wedding.
Interesting.
Well, I'm a psycho.
Yeah.
So with the AI stuff, with the way people are talking, I thought, let's look back. In my like sort of, you know, common man's look back at tech over the last 25 years, you know, because past is prologue. I wrote that. I'm the first one to say that, but it is. And if you look back, it's like Amazon kind of comes on the scene in the late 90s, not 99, but like late 95,
yeah.
I think
90s, yeah.
As a bookstore. But then by like 2000, it's humming as kind of a big hub. And people will say, well, yeah, Amazon made things so conveniently. I would love for somebody, any statisticians or anybody out there, I would love to see a breakdown of, yes, Amazon might be selling goods for cheaper, but we are almost certainly buying more goods than we did pre-Amazon.
Right.
Of many of a useless or trivial nature. Or, you know, I'm not saying books are useless, of course. But, you know,
just volumes of
we're not buying necessities. I would love to see the savings compared to the, oh, Like when my mom would sometimes say, oh, these were 2-for-1 at the supermarket.
Right.
I'm like, but we never even get one.
Right. Right.
So it's a good deal, but technically you bought more than we do anyway.
It's like the Costco thing. It's like you go to Costco and you get, you know, 600 cans of olives. And it's like you'll never, ever need to buy olives again.
I'm allergic to olives, but I got a great deal on these olives.
Right.
So I would love to first see if anybody's ever done a study on like the savings we're getting. Have we convinced ourselves that we are now an overly retail culture, even compared to what we were?
Yeah.
But we've taken out the social aspect of it, of hanging with friends and going to the mall and being human beings. Now we just spend all our money and probably more money going, that was fun.
Yeah.
That was a fun experience buying those things I don't need. Now I'm going to go back to my couch.
Yeah.
So I would argue that Amazon has made life worse. Like I think, you know, the smartphone, I think the internet has not made life worse. I think everything that came from the internet is like a, like in one of these movies, he's like the good king in House of the Dragon, the Lord of the Rings spinoff. He's good. Everybody that came from his loins is some kind of fucked up.
Well, it's like a utility. It's like saying fire is bad. Fire is not necessarily bad. Fire does good things. It helps us cook food and blah,
but
blah, blah.
But in Beavis's hands, it's a bad thing.
Right. When you're dropping it from, you know, aircraft carriers or whatever.
I take that personally, Mike. We're simply making s'mores of human beings. Oh, BB, you piece of shit. You dark, that dark sense of humor from that smooth baritone. What a monster.
Yeah.
But then, like, so next up to me is, and correct me if I'm wrong, is I think iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, iTunes, we all go, oh, well, how great is this? How great is this?
Yeah.
You know, they took the Napster model. And I was saying to Mike before the show, something about our society, we could learn from Napster. I had Napster in college. I thought it was amazing. I was like, holy shit. What?
Yeah.
I wasn't even really about the freeness of the music. It was more like, I want to listen to a song. I could just go get that song. That is cool. And then when Lars Ulrich, Mike, if I'm going to try and dig back to my Lars Ulrich impression from the 90s.
It's not bad.
But he would talk like there was something about him that was like surfer dude mixed with Cory Booker, like a big-eyed enthusiasm. We love veganism.
Yeah.
But with a bro, what's up? So Lars Ulrich was like, you know, we're anti-Napster because they're taking money from us. And everybody was like, oh, fuck you, Metallica. Just give us the stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, do you do that at your job? And we've come so far because now a tech entrepreneur will be like, I want more billions.
Yeah, right.
And we're like, well, bro, you can't stifle capitalism, bro.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurs make the world go around. But if Lars Ulrich wants his money for writing and producing his life's work.
Right.
Because he's popular and we like it.
Yeah.
We're like, fuck you.
Yeah.
You're such an asshole.
Yeah.
What? But if he was in private equity making billions, they'd be like, well, that, you know, that's, it's entrepreneurs that make things go.
Yeah.
So you get iTunes. What you get from that is unaffordable concerts and nobody respecting the completion of an album.
Right.
Now albums are just, I mean, this isn't, plenty of artists make albums. They may, most of them do. But like a lot of it is now just kind of like, what's going to be a hit? Just put out the shit. What's gonna go?
It's like music pre-60s, basically.
Yeah.
You had like a window, 60s to like the late 90s, where albums actually mattered.
Yeah.
You know, anyway.
And so I think you see there, did we gain from that? Did we gain from subscribing to music services or picking and choosing little songs? We lose some of the artistic choice of the creators. But then I would love to know if iTunes and Napster never existed, how much I'd be paying for concert tickets, because maybe they'd be gouging us, you know, Live Nation and Ticketmaster, this giant, unbelievable fucking cartel.
Maybe
that, huh?
Maybe Ticketmaster would be gouging us.
I mean, the FCC, you know, it'd be nice for them to finally undo that.
Yeah.
But I could go to a big concert in the 90s.
Right.
Big bands, good seats. And it's like, yeah, as a college kid, I'm 50 like, geez, bucks. 50 bucks. Yeah. That's a, now I'd be like, guys, these tickets are $400 each. I don't, are we kidding ourselves? Let's just watch it on YouTube.
Yeah.
So that's next, the next kind of big social tech thing.
Yeah.
In terms of how, I'm not talking about like medicine and shit like that. I'm talking about the things that we interact with and use. Then we get streaming services. Wow, that's the best. Now I don't have to go to a movie or go to a video store and interact and have a social experience. Now I can be bombarded with content that I'll never be able to watch. It will get a little bit more mediocre every year from like TV's peak.
Yeah.
It will start to get a little more mediocre. And content will become like a task. It's no longer art. When I look at my streaming services, I go, whew, I got to get through Poker Face and the Pit. And because that, you know what's coming on next week. Next week, the new season of is coming back.
Yeah.
So it's, I think it's turned art into a task. At its worst, it's destroyed art technology. But at its best, it's made it into like a task.
Yeah.
Okay. But Mike, I know what you're thinking. Not all this is bad. What about Uber?
As you all know, I'm a big defender of Uber.
You know, Uber is, you know what the problem with taxis were before? Not enough rape. That was a common complaint people had. All these unionized cab drivers, they don't like, they want to keep their jobs and don't shroud themselves in anonymity.
Yeah.
Uber is like the, now we're at the next generation. Like I just gave you the kind of the early generation of, you know, like the original five families. There was a code. Yes. There was a respect.
Right.
Now we're in the heroin dealing.
Yes.
Era of yeah. mob with
we're in
tech.
Like the 80s, 90s, we're like the Gotti era.
Yeah, that's yeah. exactly where we are.
Yeah,
where it's like now Omerta is really not a thing.
Yeah,
and people are dealing drugs.
Yep.
And you got a mooly hooker on the side. What happened? Sicilians aren't good enough for you. And you've got Uber shows up. And here's what the new model for the tech industry is. We come in, we raise money from investors, private equity. So we come with an artificially inflated war chest to kill an industry.
Yeah.
Because we're not profitable. We're losing money. But the investors and private equity, they're funneling cash to us that allow us to be way stronger. So what we do is we come into a city. And first we start as like, Uber, you've got to have manners and all your teeth and chewing gum and water and a nice, clean black car.
Yep.
We want people to have a luxurious experience. And a few people start going, ooh, I kind of like this Uber. It's kind of like a nice. And they promise the drivers. Oh, I remember the ads. 5,000 guaranteed for your first month. And I kept watching those ads. And within like 6 months, it was like $200 and a coupon to the supermarket for your first month guaranteed, because they were fucking every aspect of the industry. It starts with, we want to make people hate cabs.
Yeah.
So we're going to make it cheap, artificially cheap. You don't have to tip. Somehow people convince them. Now I know we did talk about this one time. Somehow we convinced people. Yeah. You don't have to tip the guy who works for you in an industry that's always lived on tips.
Yeah.
No need to tip. And of course, then they're like, "Ah, you should tip." Now that
I did notice, all of a sudden, the tip is an option. It's just so bizarre.
Right, I was just like $4 for a cab
yeah.
that would cost me $20 and no tip.
Yeah,
what's the catch? I'm destroying working men's lives. Oh, we'll worry about that later once they're all dead from suicide. There were like cabbies killing themselves,
yeah.
medallion owners who were like, I thought I had $1 million investment. Now it's worth $100,000.
Yeah.
But that's what they did. They took over an industry artificially. They were allowed to do it. Now, I don't begrudge de Blasio for not shutting it down, because cops hated him. People thought he was weak. And they were like, but we love Uber.
Yeah.
We love Uber. And it takes, there aren't many people alive with the spine to be like, all of you, fuck off. It's wrong. Because yeah. they'll shove your ass out and some tech bro will fund an Eric Adams type who'll be like, I want to be the Uber mayor. I have swagger and I have Uber black. That's what would have happened. Yeah. They would have funded some, just like they did with fucking crypto. Yeah. Oh, we'll get to crypto. So Uber destroys the taxi industry and now their prices are up and now the service is, I don't take Uber. I take Lyft because fewer sexual assault allegations. It's called being an ally, fellas. And they destroyed the taxi industry. And with it, regulations. And now our city is crowded with it. They said that, like, they mapped, like, the result of, like ambulance times were slower because there were, like, something like 100,000 extra vehicles on the streets of New York City.
Right.
Bad for the environment. Bad for traffic. Bad for grandma getting driven to the hospital. Great for the bros.
Yeah.
So that's now we're in that era of tech garbage. So whenever I see and then private equity, and I got to point out something about your boy Bruce.
Oh yeah,
we've joked about this before. I will make jokes about it.
But, oh, come on up for Verizon.
Well, there is something very disturbing to me when it's like Bob Dylan just sold his catalog for $200 million.
Yeah,
he's 80 and like mumbling, but. Then gotta make money because I gotta get the money because I want more money. Got no money. Don't care about art. I just want to fucking have money as an old fart.
Yeah. That should have been a verse.
Yeah.
Subterranean homesick blues.
Subterranean sellout blues. Yeah. But I'm just, I genuinely don't understand. Like, I, preemptive pat on the back, I spent a lot of money relatively to get the rights to my album Half Blackface. Not going to get into why, but it was important to me that I have that, that it be mine. And then I see Bruce Springsteen be like, oh, I got $700 million, but if I sell my catalog for $300 million to private equity, I'll be a billionaire. 2, 3, 4. Like, that's, there's something weird about that. And private equity is like, I don't know what they are. The heroin era of the mob, and then private equity is like, I don't know.
You're here to ruin it all.
Where it's just like, oh, private
apartment equity. Buildings, baseball teams, you name it.
Like, private equity gets involved, and it's just like, oh, okay. So, let's just fast forward to 2 years from now when you all are rich and this business no longer exists. Why don't we just go do that quickly? Let's just here's a suitcase full of money and crypto, and we'll go apply for unemployment. So, and then crypto is like, now it's like there's not enough real scams. Now it's like we need to invent new. I have to read Scaramucci's book on crypto, and I want to have him on to discuss it, both for information.
Scaramucci in the house of Coscarelli?
Well, probably not. Probably on video. Mike, I love Frankie. I love your dog, Frankie. He's a good Italian dog. He's a good boy. He's a good boy. We like Frankie. You know, two Italians like us, Mike, you know, we gotta stick together. And, you know, Frankie.
Yeah. Thanks, Mooch.
I don't know what he's going to learn from this tall, you know, whatever he is, half Haitian, half Irish. But, the Italian culture is what we really need to give Frankie. So it's a real subtle art to do a Scaramouche.
Yeah.
He's not a big, he's a very calm. Yeah. I do like listening to him. He has a very smooth, calm voice.
Yeah.
But I do want to have him on to talk about Bitcoin specifically, which is everybody's like, no, that's the legit one.
Yeah.
I laugh at all of it because it started as like, it's going to change money. And then just like Uber, all of a sudden things just, oh, now we tip.
Yeah.
It became a great investment. Ah, wait a second.
Yeah.
Because it was going to be money first. Now it's an investment. So now do you see why the SEC wanted to regulate it as a security? Because you're using it now as a security.
Right.
You're using it as that because it was never going to be money. Right. I was never going to go to the store and be like, how much is this milk? 0.8 cryptos?
Yeah.
0.03 bitcoins? Can you break a 0.06 bitcoin? No, keep the Bitcoin change, you bitch. So it was always an investment.
Right.
And they did this sleight of hand where they're like, it's going to change money. You don't even know. And they're like, I think Bitcoin is a sound investment strategy. Yeah. Oh, okay. So it is an investment. So what was all the hullabaloo about the SEC wanting to regulate it?
Do you remember NFTs?
Well, Trump, that brings me to Trump. Grift King.
Yeah.
He's making tons of money on NFTs and meme coins.
Yep.
And shit. And I'm going, one of the questions I will have for Scaramucci is a very basic one, but it's like, I am as layman as it comes to crypto and Bitcoin. How, when I watch a man who I view to be the nadir of ethics and morality, diving headfirst into a ton of crypto schemes, how can I look at that industry and go, no, but I'm sure it's legit.
Right, right.
I'm sure it's a totally sound, legit industry and not a total scam.
Yep.
So when I think of AI, the whole point of that JL's history of tech in the 21st century, AI is the newest, the biggest, and the scariest thing of them all. And I go, you want me to ignore every other example where there is either a financial, social, employment, cultural, or moral destruction, or sometimes multiples of those in an industry because of the tech mindset. And we didn't even talk about social media. I mean, we've talked about that before. Social media.
Beating a dead horse.
Yeah. Don't know if you know. Not great.
Yeah.
Social media and smartphones, not that great for us. But AI is like, no, but what if we took all that we've learned so far from the tech industry and multiplied it by infinity?
Yeah.
And so I go, no, I'll pass. I'll pass on AI. I'll go Ted Kaczynski minus the killings. I'll go move to a nice, relatively off the grid home before I and watch the world burn. From some people just like to watch the world burn. All the rubies, we found them in the forest.
This may be a record for impressions on the show. I'm serious.
So one day, that's the way, they went into the forest. And they found the rubies just sitting there. Because some people just want to see the world burn. but I'm not like, and I know some people say, oh, AI isn't where it's going to be. From everybody I listen to that's any kind of expert or in the field or really paying attention, it's coming. It feels like winter in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
It's just coming. And when it gets here, maybe it'll be in season 5 instead of season 2. You're like, is winter still coming?
Yeah.
Where the fuck is winter?
Yeah.
But when it comes.
Yeah. Big trouble.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yikes. So that's it. That's my opinion of tech in a nutshell. Yikes.
Yeah.
It's destroying everything. But unlike other things, it gives the veneer and the feeling of progress, of joy, of contentment. But it's not. It's very cheap. It is very much like technological drugs, I think. We're getting worse, but the high still feels good. You know, watching a show, ordering stuff online, everything's so convenient. And we convince ourselves that, like, that's good. I feel like a good thing happened because it was convenient. But we have spent 25 years destroying the world with convenience. And it's, I think, going to get a lot worse. So you might as well watch my special. Which was done the old-fashioned way on 4K footage. And we'll be back with Comedy Talk after this message.
And now, from the Slickback Studios newsroom in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, here is Scott Pelley with a Rain on Your Parade special report.
Good evening. On assignment from 60 Minutes, I'm Scott Pelley, here with this week's Punchdown of the Week. JL quote tweeted a post that had Donald Trump wandering around on the roof of the White House shouting at reporters. And JL's quote tweet said, "Jump," implying that he wanted the president to jump off the roof. And a follower of JL's wrote, "Do a flip, JL."
Oh, man.
Hey, thank you, Scott. Good to have you back. You know, Scott heard that I dumped Paramount Plus.
Yeah.
You know, and they're doing everything they can. Look at the pivot. They signed
UFC, right?
Trump's friend gives it to his son, who's an ugly son of a gun. Good thing that kid's a billionaire.
Yeah.
Have you seen him?
No.
He looks kind of like a real busted Jake Busey.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... Jake Busey, my son.
There's another one.
What about my son?
Limited Gary Busey. What? Is that your bastard son, TJ Miller? Dad! Even more limited TJ Miller impression. Dad!
Yes, son. I didn't want to acknowledge you.
That was just a classic punch down because it was just like, jump is like a finished joke. You're implying kill yourself or jump off the roof, Mr. President.
Of course.
And then this person wrote, do a flip. No, that's no.
Yeah.
No, I know a flip is more. You think you're punching up the joke by a flip is more than a jump.
Yeah.
But that's not the. If Donald Trump could do a flip, he'd gain 3 percentage points in the poll. I'm implying the other thing, that he should go to hell. Vince McMahon impression. We are on a roll tonight. Apparently, when the darkness comes, the JL characters come out.
Yeah, it's like the good old days.
In hell.
I'll miss Vincent McMahon when he dies.
Might not be very much longer.
Not like Hulk Hogan, who I really don't care.
Brother.
Here's the question before we move on. A Vince McMahon question real quick. If he goes, let's say he goes before the trial and everything just doesn't get settled. WWE's got to acknowledge him, right?
Of course.
Because he's right now persona non grata.
This isn't even like he created the Cosby Show.
Right.
It's like he created the industry. Sitcom.
Yes, right. Right. He is sitcom.
Yeah.
In hell.
Okay. So now... can you do me a favor, Producer Mike?
Yeah.
What is the title of Mark Maron's special? Yeah, man, I watched Mark Maron's special, man.
His new one? Let's see.
Yeah, on HBO, where he really takes it to the fucking right wing. He's aging very well, though.
Yeah.
He looks good in this special. You know, it's like
he's using that WTF money.
But he's like found that perfect, like, I look like I care a little bit, but I'm still got a little stubble. But the hair's looking good.
Yep.
He's got a good
facial hair too.
Early 60s look to him. More rugged than you might expect. Like if you were like, hey, which one of these guys is on Yellowstone and which one is the annoying progressive comedian?
Yeah.
Well, it's not that guy. That guy drinks whiskey and fucks. And he might still do that, obviously.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying he has almost like a, if he didn't talk, you'd be like, is this guy on Yellowstone?
Right.
It's a pretty tough older guy.
Yeah, rugged looking
in front
guy.
Of me. Got ruggedly manicured.
The special's called Panicked.
Panicked.
More specifically, Mark Maron Panicked.
Yeah, Mark Maron Panicked. So I watched it. And what the fuck? Did you ever hear my story about being on WTF?
Yes, I have.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Don't want to hear it again, do you?
I mean, if you feel like you must tell it.
No, people should know it already.
It's the JL jinx.
It's a Mount Rushmore JL jinx. It involves a dead girlfriend, a dead George Floyd.
Yeah.
And my career not realizing it was dead.
Yeah, right.
Very Bruce Willis in The Sixth Sense, career in 2020.
Yeah.
While Laura was looking at me going, I see dead comedians. So I watched it and you know, it's hard for me to, I thought it was good. I've never been of his stand up. I've just never been like a huge fan one way or the other. I've never been like, oh, he's bad. But
he's never really been for me.
Never been my thing. Yeah. you know, I've watched a few of them, but this one I did chuckle a little bit more, but I didn't laugh a ton. But I think part of the problem for me is I watch his stuff and I'm like, the one thing that I won't be, whoa, is going after big comics.
Yeah.
It's the one thing. It's the one thing that I've been doing consistently for my whole career as a nobody. So I'm not going to be like, that millionaire took it to the other millionaires. Balls on that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there seems to be a lot of praise for that aspect of it.
Who does he go at? He goes after like Hinchcliffe.
It's the Hinchcliffe makes a joke about Theo Vaughn.
Okay.
But it's the whole, it's the Rogan ecosystem, even if it's not directly connected to Rogan. But I think they kind of are. It's that kind of, you know, and then what got circulated around recently is the Carlin clip from Larry King, where he's talking about Andrew Dice Clay.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And I watched that, and God, you know, Carlin, I feel like I've had, much like Mark Twain and George Carlin, mine has been more the street level version of that, from court jester impersonator to thinker and pundit, sort of. But Carlin, if it wasn't for that second to last special he did where he's in the graveyard,
which I like,
that
but you
was
don't.
Fucking misery.
Yeah.
Hearing him opine on things, unlike a lot of comics, not me, by the way, not me, my shit's fire. You're like, that's a real social commentator.
Yes.
That's a guy who's really thought everything through, whatever his viewpoints are. And hearing him talk about Andrew Dice Clay, outside of me, I don't know if I could see somebody articulating something like
that.
He
was very succinct. I remember that. I mean, I don't remember the...
And he even gave credence to like, and I would never... why do we call it co-parenting? What did you do before you co-parented? Told the kid to fuck off.
Broken plane.
We are... Hello, would you like to pre-board? If I pre-board, I'm boarding. I'm on the plane or in the plane?
Yeah.
I'm in the plane. No, you're on the plane. I love that shit. He
fuck
went from
you,
like,
I'm getting in the plane.
He went from like impersonator and goofy to like hip thinking to like word guy, like almost a little bit of Gullman type type humor in there to like social commentary where there were a couple specials in there where I was like, could use more jokes. I got to be honest. But he even said like, I would never tell Andrew what he can say and not say.
Yeah, right.
Like, so he...
Because he was being critical of him punching down.
Right.
But he wasn't saying like he shouldn't do it.
Right.
He's saying I wouldn't do it. And I don't think that that's what comedy really is.
Right.
But whatever he wants to do, go ahead.
It was just so perfectly articulated.
Yeah.
And so thoughtful and so, just look up that clip instead of watching Marin's special. No, I appreciated Marin's special and I liked it more than some of his others, but it's like I don't really laugh at his stuff very much. And like the people in his audience, and he even acknowledges like his audience and like, he's like, you know, if you're in a Whole Foods parking lot, you might be like my kind of fan. So it's self-aware. It's sharp. It's, I enjoyed it more than some of the other stuff I've seen where it's like, cause this is a little more meta and I'm into, I do like that. I do like when somebody thoughtful with a sense of humor does a little bit of meta looking at the comedy world. Not like an idiot or somebody with like one line, but, I'd be curious what people thought of it. It's a lot of people have watched it, so feel free to let me know in the comments. Some people, I just feel like the audience was like loving it, and I was just like, this is solid. I was more like, he looks good.
That's the thing,
That was where my head was more like, this is solid, and he looks good.
I've always felt about him since I've followed his career, since basically the run of WTF, essentially. Like, I've always been a huge fan of his as almost like a tastemaker.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought he has great taste, and I do think he's funny and blah blah blah, but I feel the same way. Like, I don't necessarily watch his specials and go like, damn, I'm such a Marc Maron,
and he is
comedy
a real
fan.
Comic.
Yeah,
I don't.
I think he's a good actor. I think what WTF is like, maybe the most iconic podcast of all time.
Not to righteous prick OGs.
But he's got, like, I think that all of the things that he has done around, and I think he's a good comedian, but I think
you know what
that,
I mean when I say yeah. he's, because in this age, I think that is important to be like, he's not an influencer or podcaster.
Exactly.
Who's getting on stage to talk to his fans. He's many decades in the business.
Yes.
And in the art.
Yes.
But you know, you said he's a good tastemaker. Well, I'm going to relive one moment for you. Yeah. Well, this guy, J.L. Covan, he was on the show and he does a really, I mean, you got to listen to it. I was laughing. It's really funny. His Trump impression. We talked for like 20 minutes with him as Trump. And, you know, since I had Obama on the show, we had him as like, this was the complimentary interview. I was representing Trump as his parallel to his real Obama.
That's pretty cool.
And then he said, but, you know, in light of what's going on, I just don't, you know, it just doesn't feel appropriate right now. And there it was. That was my appearance. And then we had, he just played like the 15 minute conversation we had.
Yeah.
But
without the
sizzle. I had him laughing.
Yeah.
I had him laughing during the whole fucking thing.
Yeah.
And so is that coloring my opinion of Panic? No, it's not, because I am an artist of the utmost integrity when it comes to comedy. But yeah, I'd be curious what people thought of it, especially like not people like me, just random comedy fans. You know, I have a left of center base, see what they think. Maybe they'll be like, oh, I thought it was one of the best. Or I thought it was great. A lot of people I know and comics I know have really enjoyed it. I just don't, speaking truth to power isn't as shocking to me. And I don't mean to be like, cause I'm the, but that is what I fucking mock the industry all the time. Like some of my biggest hits, you know, have been as a nobody punching way up George Carlin, way up.
Yeah.
You know who I like? This JL. This guy punches up like nobody's business. Is it because he's tall? I don't know. Or is it because, anyway, guys, that's enough impressions. That's enough shitting on the past, present, and future. Go watch Trump versus Canada. Give this a freaking good review on Spotify and Apple. Get the tickets to the shows. Jersey City, Philadelphia, DC, Charlotte. The links are all up now. No reason to wait. Put it in your calendar. Tell your friends. Please. The career is
teetering.
Yeah. It's fading. You know, I have a full-time job helping people now. So keep it alive. Don't keep hope alive. Keep my comedy career alive. So on that note, thank you everybody for listening and or watching. And I will see you next Thursday.